This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. And today we're talking about how theaters across the state have adapted to the COVID-19 pandemic and find out what's in store in the coming months. If you have questions or comments on our show today, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. You just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Oh, we're joined now by three guests. I'd like to welcome Michael Lasley, the Executive Artistic Director for the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater in Carmel. Also, Aaron Nichols, the Executive Director of the South Bend Civic Theater. And Carly Myers is the Chief Marketing Officer for the Embassy Theater in Fort Wayne. You know, the pandemic drastically impacted so many. And today I am honored to speak with our guests involved in Indiana Theater to find out what happened to them and how they're doing. And Michael, I'd like to find out from you, when the news first broke about COVID-19 getting to Indiana, what did you think was going to happen with the Civic Theater in Carmel?
Well, it was hard to tell what was going to happen, and none of us have ever been through anything quite like this. Certainly, you know, I mean, it's been 100 years since something this widespread has happened. So we weren't really sure. You started to get the rumblings, you know, and then things, I think the big clue for me was when the NBA decided to shut down. I think that was the day before we really shut everything down here. But we were in the middle of rehearsal for A Few Good Men, our opening week. We literally canceled everything 3 hours before opening night.
Mm. You know, it was about this, well, I guess now, about a year when it all started to break. So what has changed since the start?
I mean, we're largely in exactly the same place in terms of our ability to produce. We've sort of carved away the edges and found ways to stay connected with our audience by doing virtual performances. During the summer, we did a lot of instruction outside with our education programs. We went online virtually with education almost immediately because we were about ready to start the spring session for our education programs. So, you know, we tried to reinvent every aspect of our operation and stay relevant and stay connected with our audiences, but we're largely speaking exactly where we were a year ago. And that's mostly due to social distancing as much as it is the virus.
And then once everything started to go virtual, I would imagine that was like a whole new way of looking at things and doing things, obviously, when you go virtual. Was that really challenging for you guys?
We talk about it often. You know, we as theater professionals and the nature of our job, we're very used to a particular kind of exhaustion that comes from 60 to 80 hour weeks. But after years and for some of us decades of doing that, we know that rhythm. We feel that rhythm, and it's easier than it would be for a lot of other people. But suddenly we found ourselves having to try and do what we knew before, but in a fundamentally different way, and learn how to become online producers and video producers, overnight to try and sort of catch up very quickly with things that, I mean, we had some skill sets that helped, but we did not know how to do this. Right. So it was a very quick and steep learning curve.
Aaron, you're the executive director of the Civic Theater in South Bend. Was your experience similar to Michael's?
Absolutely. We had luckily just finished a production versus just going into a production. But we had a beautiful April production of West Side Story as a partnership with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra planned. So I was literally, in the same way Michael said, hours away from signing equity contracts, bringing people in to start an abbreviated rehearsal period. So, yeah, I mean, it just stopped us in our tracks. We had an event that Thursday night, kind of a dinner and discussion event, and we were just kind of feeling that strange closing in at that event, saying this may be the last time we come together in this way for a significant period of time. I don't think anyone ever thought it was going to be a year, but at that point, we knew we were in for a change. And that change happened very much the way Michael reiterated for him. I mean, we moved very quickly into virtual content, trying to find ways. I think that word that he used, relevance, to stay relevant, was incredibly important because, you know, without the live in-person experience, I mean, that is what we are. And so we had to figure out what we would become. And that has been in an interesting period of pivot. It seems like every week we're pivoting in some way or another to meet the new needs of the community. You know, at first it was public health fear, and then it started to become isolation, and now, you know, depression, and this need for connection is so important in our community, and we have to find ways to do that in a way that's still safe, which means at this point not in person.
Right. And I would imagine, like you mentioned, you know, that isolation and that need to want to connect has been lost. And kind of going back a little bit to when you were talking about how finishing up productions, and you also look ahead, right? You book productions, you plan for them. And when those didn't happen, I would assume that there was a big financial hit as well.
Sure. And I think we decided pretty early that we would be doing our best to postpone as opposed to cancel. So we are now just about to communicate a kind of reboot of our 2020 season as best we can in the, you know, late spring into the end of this year. Many of the productions that we postponed will be coming back. So we had a lot of communication with our season ticket holders. Hey, you just want to stick with us, please. You know, we'll be back with a lot of the productions you were excited about. A lot of people did choose to do that, which was helpful for us because, you know, the money that they had paid in for those tickets, we were able to hold on to in restricted giving, of course. But knowing that we were going to be moving forward and presenting some of those same shows gave our ticket buying public the confidence to kind of stick with us, knowing that we'd be back with what they were expecting.
Let's look at a positive. Do you have anything that you think came out of this in a positive way?
I think, you know, in civic theater specifically, you're always nimble. I mean, mm-hmm. That's a word we use a lot. And so it reiterated the confidence that we can pretty much tackle anything. You know, I've used the expression, you know, everyone has a rainy day fund, or, you know, if you're fiscally responsible, not many organizations have a rainy year fund. So it did help us learn how to exist in a way that allowed the finances that we had to serve the organization. We were happy to survive the year in the black, and that was because we were ready to make the immediate shifts to, you know, annual budgets that needed to happen. And I'm confident as an executive director now that the South Bend Civic Theater can survive, knock on wood, just about anything.
Yeah, that's amazing. You finished in the black, considering, you know, you took a hit. So that's great. Carly.
And a lot of it was because of a huge amount of sacrifice. And I want to give the artists of this state a lot of credit because I had a staff of 18 when we started to wind back in March. And by the time we got to July, I had a staff of one. Mm-hmm. When we got back to saying, okay, what are we going to do in 2021? Now my staff is back to nine, but we're still running at half capacity as far as our payroll. And that saved the organization, but there was a lot of sacrifices that my staff, that the volunteers of this organization, that the donors of this organization were willing to undertake to make sure that this, you know, this pride of the city, you know, continued to operate, like I said, in the black.
Right. Carly, can you talk about what happened at the Embassy Theater in Fort Wayne when all this first started last year?
Sure, absolutely. We were right in the middle of getting ready to head into three national tours because we're not only a national theater, but we serve local and community needs as well. So we had Toby Mac, Wild Kratts, Jerry Seinfeld, all these national shows that were just right around the corner, as well as our summer programming and our educational programming that comes along with the summer. And we had to just kind of, as my colleagues have stated on the call, just figure out kind of stop in our tracks, connect with everyone involved, figure out what postponement looked like at, in the moment, which was really just kind of standing still there for a couple of months, and then figure out very quickly how we were going to serve Northeastern Indiana and Fort Wayne specifically from a community's perspective during such a challenging time. So we proceeded with our original programming that we bring to the city starting in June. So we actually opened back up and received people through the doors very early in June. Now we were at a very reduced capacity, crazy low capacity. But we, from an operational perspective, said, if we can have people here in a safe or COVID-friendly way and it gets approved by our Department of Health, then we should do this so that we can offer people a place to come and gather during a really, really hard time, not only from the pandemic perspective, but from the racial equity and everything else that we were facing as a nation. So we actually reopened our doors very quickly.
What did that capacity look like when you did open your doors back up in June?
Yeah, so those we have a series of events called Summer Nights at the Embassy, and they start usually at the end of May, early June, and go through the very beginning of fall. And those normally, those are local performers that that perform on site, and we kind of open up our building. We have the luxury of space, so we have a very large facility. And we're normally used to pulling in a few hundred people for each of those events every Wednesday night. And for these events last year, we started at a capacity of 48 people. And that was it. And we were very strict about it. We had very strong rules for participating and being a part of those groups and those crowds. But people came and participated and followed the rules. And we just thought, you know, this is going to be a good kind of practice for when we get to expand into larger numbers as we move through the pandemic.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with our guest after just a quick break. We'll learn more. We're talking about how Indiana Theaters reacted about the COVID-19 pandemic, how things have changed for them during the pandemic. As always, if you have any questions or comments for the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Taylor Bennett. We will be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. We're talking today about how Indiana theaters have adapted to the COVID-19 pandemic and what they have planned this year. We would love your questions and comments on this topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from. That number is 866-476-3881. And you can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we will definitely try to get it onto the show today. Aaron, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, as far as holding shows and using online tools like Zoom, which was all new to me last year. I never even heard of Zoom for some reason. So it was kind of a new thing to learn to adapt there. How did you guys use that? Did you utilize things like that or streaming platforms?
Yeah, absolutely. We started with Zoom, honestly, all the way through the year. I mean, we had a couple Facebook Live events, but we hadn't gone into a larger streaming contract like Vimeo or one of the streaming services until early this year. You know, I think we were just trying to respond with whatever we had. I think the public often expected, you know, theaters to be virtual right away. Michael mentioned that quickly, but you know, it takes some time to ramp up an organization that's used to doing live theater to doing streaming, because there is all of the additional technology requirements of, you know, filming a compelling production. You know, you don't just want to have one camera sitting in the back of the theater, you know, if you are going to do something with people in a theater. Zoom does work when you're looking at, you know, that what we call Brady Bunch theater style, or when you're just having one small room. But we were able to, even with the limitations of Zoom, do a 24-hour theater festival, you know, a 10-minute play festival. We did, you know, virtual play readings. We actually even had some, you know, fairly large events. One plays to end gun violence called Enough, and then something at the holiday season called Light One Candle, celebrating the cultural traditions of the holidays and in all those various traditions. So to answer your question, yes, we were able to. Were the first couple months very good? No, I think we were all on a learning curve trying to figure out that. And that's why in the past, you know, 9 months, I think the public has expected progress, has expected everyone to get a little better. And I think we are all doing a really laudable job of doing that. For instance, now we've moved to streaming productions, you know, small plays, because musicals are still a little challenging and not as safe. So we are doing small cast plays. But that progress has been gradual, incremental. And I'm really proud of where all theaters have come, figuring out how to basically do an entirely different medium. You know, this is more like film than live theater. It's more like television than live theater. So, you know, that's been a really fun progression, honestly. I think a lot of us have been surprised by how effective we can do what we do in different ways as we've had that time to grow.
Right. You know, I think one of the best things and what I always enjoy about going to theater is that connection to those on the stage. And obviously, you know, when you have to go virtual, right? You have to look at this on your phone or laptop and look at it that way. You lose that connection, obviously. But as actors, musical performers, you know, is that lost as well on them? Do you feel like that impacts their performance?
It's strange. We had two solo productions. One was called Tea at Five about Katharine Hepburn, another called Vincent about Vincent Van Gogh. Both of those individual actors were very daunted by the prospect of performing in front of no one, because there is an energy that goes back and forth between an audience and a performer. So that has been a challenge. It has been a challenge that our acting volunteers have been very willing to take, just because they realize that, you know, we have, you know, 20,000 patrons who are hungry to see something coming out from the local arts scene. Mm-hmm. So they've been willing, again, to make those sacrifices to kind of change their way of performing to accommodate the new normal. But I know that they are so excited to have things come back to live in-person events. I'm so excited about the return of spring, because we have a very robust season of outdoor performances planned, because that's, I think, where we should be right now. I don't plan on opening my theater to live in-person performances until the fall, when honestly we have to, when it gets cold again.
Yeah, I'm excited about those outdoor performances as well. Michael, you talked earlier about education programs going virtual. How did you make the most of those online education programs for those involved?
Yeah, so we jumped into Zoom and Teams. And I feel like I've used every meeting platform, every webinar platform, and every live broadcast platform at some point during this, just trying to sort of find the one that worked the best for us. Ultimately, Zoom seems to have been sort of the thing that we've landed on. It allows for a good kind of interaction with the particularly students and instructors. But then when we got into this winter here, we've actually started back with live, I'll back up. We did live instruction during the summer, on an individualized basis, indoors, very masked and very limited. And then we also did a bunch of outdoors. We even had a big, large outdoor performance. We have the benefit of having a giant park in front of our theater here. So that would allow us to sort of create this environment where everybody learned everything online, and then we brought them in a very limited fashion, and we all went through health checks and temperature checks. Everybody's masked, and they're all, you know, although they were more like 12 feet apart out on the green outside at that point, to create this sort of live performance, give our students an opportunity to perform together, which of course by that time they were just crazy with the inability to see their friends that they'd seen, you know, day after day after day coming to class. So yeah, the education programs have been something we sort of really struggled with. And the deeper we've gotten into this, and I'm sure my colleagues have had the same experience, people are getting a little tired of this idea of the online, of the virtual, less and less interested. So we started with our winter session at half capacity, and our class was live and in person. Everybody's masked, everybody's distanced. We have the benefit of having large rooms that we can have these classes in. And as we look towards the spring, we're looking to increase that capacity a little bit, but we don't expect to be back to full capacity until the fall.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned people are getting tired of the whole virtual thing. Do you still feel like, though, they will come back and they're feeling comfortable at some point the summer this year?
I do think so. I mean, certainly it's the feedback we're getting directly from our patrons, from our subscribers. They're anxious to come back. They obviously want it to be safe. They want to feel like it's safe. And there's going to be protocols and vestiges of what we've experienced over the last years that I would assume will take us even all the way through to the beginning of 2022. So to some degree, I hope some of these things stay with us. I hope people begin to wear masks when they don't feel well, but don't feel like they need to stay home. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps maybe they just reschedule their tickets for another day when they do feel better.
Right.
So hopefully we've learned some lessons about the spreading of disease in general, not just COVID. But I really feel optimistic that there's going to be a pretty big rebound. But I don't think we're there yet in terms of public confidence.
Yeah, it may take a while. Carly, you had mentioned earlier that you opened your doors back up in June. What kind of response did you get from the community? I mean, obviously people wanted to come in and participate as long as there was, you know, the social distancing practices in place. But did you get any backlash from that?
You know, during the summer, we had a very limited group of people that were comfortable coming back and doing anything. And those were the people that came, and we had our operations plan in place, fully approved by the Department of Health, to feel confident that we were doing the right thing by doing that. And the people that attended had a lovely time. They gave us incredible feedback, and we didn't really get a lot of negative feedback from members, patrons, the public about what we were doing, because the capacities were so low. And, you know, and there was a choice. You know, we told people that we were doing this in a way that had been approved and thought through. And if they weren't comfortable, we certainly understood that and that we would be here when they were. However, there were people that did want to get out and kind of migrate about as safely as possible when they could. And so I would say, as we moved through the early part of the pandemic, we didn't have a lot of pushback. We did get a little bit of pushback as we went into the fall and winter, when our numbers in the northern part of the state were kind of going up and our capacities kept getting reduced. And we handled that as best as we could, just through, you know, one-on-one communication, fielding those comments as best as we could, trying to explain to people that they were, you know, our plans had been fully approved and that we were doing our best to kind of navigate through the ups and downs of capacity, which we had grown accustomed to and pretty skilled at throughout the summer and early fall. But as we approached the holidays, that's when things started going a little bit chaotic at times with how we had to change on a dime for some of our events.
Can you go into more detail about that, and how do you change pretty quickly, especially around the
yeah.
holidays, right?
Sure. Yeah. So right around Halloween was actually when we started to we had an event in October where literally it was a weekend event, and the night before we had to go down to 50 people capacity in our auditorium. And our auditorium seats almost 2,500 people. But that was all the local department was willing to let us have, and we certainly understood it. So luckily, the production, we had a virtual option for that and an in-person option. And we were able to call people and find out if they wanted to move their in-person option to a virtual ticket. We were able to move people around for the three performances that we had and make sure that we kind of scattered people throughout the three, because there was one that was lighter than the others. We started planning for worst case scenario going into the holidays and figuring out exactly what some of those events would look like. We have a very popular annual tradition called the Festival of Trees that draws in normally about 23,000 people a year. And last year was the 36th annual. And we were really hoping to have 250 or 530 people capacity for that event. But we had to get everything down to 100 people when we opened the doors. And what we had to do was we got very creative. We changed the hours of the event. So we extended our open hours. We extended the length of the festival to almost two full weeks. We figured out how to navigate through our facility to look at all 50-ish trees that we had so that it was a one-way traffic pattern and that we were cutting down all the congregating that normally happens during that. And having only 100 people in the facility at any given time, we do that anyways. We know when we scan somebody in, we know that they're there. We know that when that person leaves the building. So we had a contact tracing plan in place that we were very comfortable with at the time. We just had to kind of be nimble and adaptable, knowing that, you know, within a day or two, the plans could change. And we had already kind of had that mentality when we started doing things in the summer that we might have to suddenly kind of regroup and figure out how to do things. And we've luckily, I work with a staff that's pretty incredible at being able to talk to people who are hosting weddings at our venue or having an educational event that we're trying to take virtual. And you have to manage how many volunteers and actors and team members and stuff are in the building at any given time. And we've just been able to figure it all out as we go.
Right. I think that was kind of the theme of last year, figure it out as we all go along. Aaron, what was your response, or did you feel like you got from the South Bend community?
Well, I have to say the public health department has been amazing and has been very responsive to us. We did a summer outdoor show in July of 2020. We had an indoor performance of Emma, the Jane Austen play, and we took it to one of the local parks, and that pivoted very quickly. We had a go, no-go number regarding, some of those number of infections, we had a fairly extensive plan for shutdown or making the performances smaller or the attendance smaller. We got two performances of that summer production, and then the numbers went above where we were comfortable. They went from yellow to orange. So unfortunately, we had a virtual option too. We had recorded the opening night, and for all those people who bought tickets for the rest of it, we gave them the option of a refund or watching that virtual production. So we were ready, and unfortunately, we had to use that virtual option when we would have loved to have had, eight outdoor performances. So again, that understanding that every day we would have to pivot, it was exhausting, but we did. I can confidently say in the 10, 11 months that we've been dealing with this so far, that our public has been incredibly willing to take this journey with us. They've been incredibly supportive of the Herculean efforts that arts organizations are going through, especially those organizations that are doing their best to try to bring something to them. And that has been my goal from the beginning, like do what we can to never go dark, to never truly stop, but find ways to do what we do, even in the darkest of circumstances.
Right. What is the staff and everyone involved in theater production? What have they said? What is some of their biggest concerns and what do they think?
I think for me going forward, going backwards, obviously furloughing and those kind of decisions are always hard. My staff has been remarkable. I can speak for them, but I would say going forward, the biggest concern is for front of house. Do theaters need to become kind of these gatekeepers? Are we going to have to go into some sort of vaccination passport? Are we going to have to, have our front of house staff keep people out, make sure they're providing the documentation to let them in? It becomes a less welcoming environment. And that's unfortunate, especially because we are an organization that prides ourselves on being kind of that light in the darkness, that welcoming space. And I think most theaters try to be that, but it's going to be hard as we figure out how to navigate a reopening that's both safe and sensitive.
Right. And obviously, I mean, it is something to think about, right? How are you going to reopen and make sure that everyone stays safe when you look at that? So that'll be interesting to look at. We'll talk more when we come back after just a quick break here. We're talking with leaders at three Indiana theaters about their experience during the pandemic and what productions they have planned in the coming months. If you have questions or comments for our guest today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. And don't forget, you can also leave us a voicemail. That number is 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. And you can send us voice messages, too, without even making a call. You can use our phone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. I'm Taylor Bennett. We will be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Back now to our discussion on theaters across the state during the COVID-19 pandemic. As always, we love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from. To do that, all you need to do is just call 866-476-3881. Carly, let's talk about a show that's coming up for the Fort Wayne Embassy Theater. Can you talk about what Down the Line 15 is and how the theater will be holding this show?
Actually, we just had that event over the weekend, and we actually sold out of our capacity. We're allowed to have 530 people in our auditorium at the moment, and we sold out, which actually surprised me a little bit. But this is an event that we have every year. It was the 15th version of it. It is an event that we host that's an Embassy Original program that picks a theme for music. So this year it was soul music. And then we highlight some local performers that are incredibly talented people that choose to pay homage to an icon of that genre. So like this weekend we had Isaac Hayes, Stevie Wonder, The Supremes, that were all kind of reimagined and performed by local artists that have not had the ability to be able to perform very much, if at all, in recent months.
Well, that's amazing. So it was a sold out show. And like you said, that it was kind of surprising.
It was a bit surprising to me as somebody that has had my finger on the pulse of how we have kind of navigated the psychological buying through this. I've been pretty accurate about how we've been able to accommodate patrons and at what numbers and what kind of interest there will be for different events that we've hosted throughout the pandemic. And I did not think we'd get to a sellout with this, but was really kind of excited and hopeful about the fact that we have people that come to this every year that wanted to come and that felt comfortable coming. And it really speaks to our team in setting this kind of tone for what we expect of people when they're in the embassy, which is masks aren't negotiable. Distancing is not negotiable. We have things set up from our concessions area to how we seat everyone in an assigned manner in the auditorium. We ask people not to congregate in common areas. We set the tone for that when we started all this last June, and we've been able to train our staff really well. We have an amazing cleaning partner that's a part of our community that helps us with sanitization schedules. We've all been trained on all of these protocols. So I feel like the sellout was an indication of the confidence in what the embassy is doing, as well as an indication of people being excited about returning to some kind of normalcy, even though I know that that's going to take a while for us to all get back to being, you know, what the new normal will be at some point. But I think that according to the surveys and the feedback I'm getting from our patrons and our community, they're starting to feel comfortable about doing things in the summer and fall. So we are really gearing up to kind of take that on and expect that will be kind of the psychological pattern of people wanting to get back and gather again.
Did you have any issues with people not complying with your safety guidelines?
No, and as a matter of fact, we've had very few issues throughout the pandemic where we've had to get security involved. I'm not going to say that we have not had any, because we have. But we always have security at the majority of our events. If somebody has refused to comply for any given reason and they won't listen to staff or volunteers, because we have a really robust volunteer team that has helped us navigate through those discussions with people, then we've had to bring security into the play at times. But for the most part, people understand, and I try my hardest in my role to make sure that people understand that that's not up for debate. So, and that's why, you know, in talking with my colleagues today and hearing what they're saying, you know, that's why we offer so often a virtual option, because if somebody doesn't want to mask up or they don't want to comply to some of these things that probably feel constraining to an entertainment experience, then we've been able to most of the time to give them a virtual option that gives them something, you know, that you know, can either be brought to them more comfortably or at least mitigate the issues of, you know, if you don't want to mask up in the auditorium, well, you know, perhaps you'll like this option that you can see at home.
Looking ahead to the rest of the year, you're talking about, you know, spring and summer coming up. What does it look like for the Embassy Theater?
So we have, you know, we just came off of this great weekend with this event down the line. We actually are hosting a large community event this weekend called Spring Forward Fest. And instead of it being a one evening event, which it has been the last couple of years, we're making it a full weekend event so that we can encourage social distancing. It basically is a gathering of people in the downtown Fort Wayne area. And instead of having just a few venues, we've extended it out to 6 venues and a variety of downtown attractions to get people to feel kind of comfortable and spreading out. So that's coming up this weekend. We have a partnership with the Indiana Performing Arts Theater out of Indianapolis that we're having them come and do The Color Purple in April. And then as we move into the summer, we'll do our Host of Embassy program, which includes summer nights again on Wednesdays and some other things that we kind of have up our sleeves. But also we have our educational programming that we're robustly putting out there now, which are virtual study trips and Learn It Live events. And then we have a devised theater workshop called SCORE that happens in July that we are going to be having just like normal. And we actually were able to have that last year. And then looking into, you know, we have some other events coming up that are a part of our racial equity involvement with racial equity in our city, which is great. But going into the end of the summer and into fall, we're seeing a lot of the national tours that already have lots of holds on our calendar for basically the fall and winter. So I think as we move through the next couple of months, we're going to see those tours solidify things in a way that we feel fairly confident, I hope, in that those shows are going to actually happen. Whether it's at a reduced capacity or not, I think that people are just waiting for us to get to back to a certain level where we can actually say, we're going to press go on this and not postpone it again.
Right. And it sounds like it's very busy and it's very promising looking ahead to see that you are going to be busy. Michael, I wanted to ask you, Michael, too, about the Civic Theater in Carmel. Are you guys planning any shows coming up or down the road?
We are. We just finished a production of Pride and Prejudice, which was done, I'll call it 98% all virtual. We did in our second 2 weekends because of the improvement in conditions here in central Indiana. We did offer our subscribers the opportunity to come in and see the show live, as well as some family members of the cast. It's a bit of an odd experience, though, to watch a show that is framed for virtual production and to do so in a 500-seat house where there's, I think the largest audience we had was about 19. So it's a bit of a strange experience, and mm-hmm. we'd begun putting in laughter and applause sort of just to establish a rhythm for the performers. So we did that. That's sort of, I think, in my mind at least, and so unless things go badly from here in a significant way, was the last time we're going to focus sort of solely on the virtual. We're going to start transitioning towards the idea of framing up what we're doing for live audiences. As long as things continue to improve, we can have a reduced 20% capacity in our facilities. We're part of a larger campus, the Center for the Performing Arts here, and there are 6 resident companies as well as the center itself. which has its own national acts that it brings in. And so we all sort of operate under the same guidelines for each of the facilities in terms of capacity and rules and what the expectations are. So we had hoped that we would be able to get back to sort of some sense of normal by the end of this, which would have been The Color Purple, which is scheduled to open on April 30th. Nothing has been finalized yet, but it is in all likelihood, we will move that forward to the beginning of next year. It's not because we don't think we can manage to put it together. We already have a cast. We've gone through the audition process virtually, but it's more about impact. And for the first all black show that Civic has done in 30 years, we did not want them to be put in a position where it felt like a less than experience for the audience and for the performers on stage. So we're going to try and push that forward so that hopefully by the fall, we're back to something closer to normal. We do plan to have a live performance during that same period of time in the end of April, beginning of May. We're just sort of still crafting what that is. It'll likely be sort of a highlight reel for what's to come in the next year. We have two educational programs that are coming at the end of June with Frozen Junior and at the end of July with Saturday Night Fever, high school edition for our young artist production. We are cautiously optimistic that maybe social distancing will maybe reduce to an extent that we can increase our capacity and make those things a realistic possibility for us. And also cautiously optimistic by the time we get to October that we'll be back to at least somewhere more than the area of 75% capacity, if not full capacity. So that's our plan. We're sort of looking that we're on the downslope here of this. And we'll continue to observe all the appropriate guidelines set out by the CDC and the local health department to make sure that we keep everyone safe.
Right. And we'll stay positive that things will continue to improve and those productions will go on. You're getting support, do you think, from the community?
We are. I mean, our local community has been tremendous. In the immediate aftermath of the cancellations last year of our last two main stage shows, we were humbled at the number of subscribers and single ticket buyers that donated their tickets back to us. They've been supportive all the way through. As I mentioned before, I think that everyone's tolerance / appetite for virtual material is waning quite a bit. And with each passing production, we find that to be the case, which is one of the reasons why, even though we'll have virtual options, I think for our products all the way through at least the end of 2021, we anticipate that being less and less popular as there are more and more people allowed to be in the theater. And I think people are ready to come back. They're just not quite confident to do it in big numbers yet. Mm-hmm. But I was pleased to hear what Carly said about her event last weekend.
Right. Yeah, that is very encouraging, especially being a sellout. Aaron, before we close our show today, I wanted to talk to you. What is everyone there currently working on in South Bend?
Well, we're trying to finish a virtual series. We have three more productions that are in rehearsal right now for the virtual, trying to get us into our warmer weather. But we are excited about the summer, like I say, going outdoors. We're doing a first annual Fringe Festival here in South Bend. And, you know, we've never done that before. For those who aren't familiar with that, it's just kind of a edgy, weird, adventurous festival of the arts, interdisciplinary, but performing arts. We are going to have 28 slots, and we put it out for open application. We got over 75 applicants. So again, to what Michael, to what Carly are saying, people are ready to do again. And it allowing them that kind of foundation that we're going to be providing all of the logistics for it, I think made people a little more willing to kind of get out there for the first time. So we're hoping to do, well, we are going to be doing that the 6th through the 9th of May. That'll lead into three more productions outdoors. Again, we feel that's a little safer. We're in that strange position that we have a 210 seat auditorium and an 80 seat black box. So when you do have percent restrictions, and you're talking about 25%, I mean, we're that black box can only serve 20 people at that point. So that's not really a usable space until some of these restrictions are lifted. That's why we're really focusing on outdoor productions. Mm-hmm. Even our 210, which we consider our large auditorium compared to some of these larger ones we've been talking about, you know, 50% is only 100 seats. So I'm anxiously awaiting the time where we're at 75% and to what Michael said, you know, full capacity. And I am cautiously optimistic as well that we can be doing that in the fall. Vaccination levels, you know, I've been saying this when I talk to the media, you know, this the return for the arts depends on the responsibility of the patrons. We really, really need people to get vaccinated, to take this seriously so we can all come back, because we're also hungry for live in-person events, but it takes everyone kind of coming together, you know, going all in. There you go. We got
that's a great tie-in. Thanks.
Right. But it's true. It really is true. And, you know, our education program, we're going to be hopefully doing summer camps and classes. We just put out all that information and we've had pretty good signups so far. We're going to do those live. We're going to do them with masks and distancing. But again, people want to come back, and all of us, you know, Carly, Michael, me, all of us want to provide those options for people, but we want to do it in a way that is safe, both. And I think this is important too, but safe, both public health, but safe financially too. You know, it doesn't make sense if you can't sell enough tickets to pay for your expenses. So that's why the numbers being lifted, the percentages being increased, make it viable again for us to produce live theater. And so that's important that everyone kind of comes together to make sure that all of our ambitions, all of our excitement can turn into these productions that we're also hungry to produce.
I know that we all want those live performances, but do you think that virtual streaming of these productions is something that the theaters will continue to do even after all this is all over? There's no more pandemic. Do you think that it's going to be always an option?
I can give you an actual example, not anecdotal, but the true numbers. We had budgeted about 300 households to stream each of these streaming productions that we've done this spring. We've only averaged about half that. And I think that speaks to that kind of exhaustion, that virtual malaise that's starting to happen for everyone. So it's really expensive to, well, at least for us, we don't have an inside company. We have a great relationship with a company called Eventsys, a production company. But, you know, there's thousands of dollars of extra cost to doing those virtual offerings. So if you have to do not just live, but also virtual, then it increases the production costs even more. So I think that it becomes really challenging to do both. I'll actually probably be talking to Michael after this call to see how they're planning to do that, mm-hmm. because I think there will be people who are still hesitant, you know, people who are immunocompromised. There's a whole laundry list of reasons why people may not want to take the chance. And we want to make sure we're serving them as well. And, you know, how do you do that and be financially responsible at the same time? That's the challenge we run into now.
All right. Well, I wish all of you the best of luck. And thanks so much for taking time today to share your experience. And again, hopefully things will continue to improve for everyone. Again, thanking our guest, Michael Astley, Executive Director, Artistic Director for the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater in Carmel, Aaron Nichols, Executive Director of the South Bend Civic Theater, and Carly Myers, Chief Marketing Officer for the Embassy Theater in Fort Wayne. I'm Taylor Bennett. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All In.